We headed to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Welcome back in the fourth and final quarter of this edition of the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, the Keystone Sports app. Dustin Hawkinson and Greg Pickle here with you one more time, saving perhaps our best for last. This is Ask Greg. These are questions from you guys to our own Greg Pickle on the Penn State football and Penn State recruiting front. I think most of these will have come through the Keystone Sports app, which has the Ask Greg button there. You can ask a question there anytime. He's our recruiting guru, so a lot of these questions do tend to skew towards recruiting. Are you ready, Greg?
Oh, I'm ready. Let's do it, buddy.
Let's start with our good friend Dominic from Cranberry Township. A two-parter. Number one, which 2020 target is most likely to become a Nittany Lion? Let's just start with that one.
Yeah, you know, man, I don't know. I guess I'll just go with Julian Fleming. I mean, we're so far away here. Two things I like for Penn State. Number one, he's visited a lot. And he, of course, is a five-star Southern Columbia 2020 wide receiver. And he's been on campus quite a bit. Do I think it hurt that Josh Gattis left Penn State? Yeah, I do. But do I think he's going to pick the Lions anyway? Yes, so he would be my pick.
That's a good pick. I mean, I think that Alabama has potential to make a move, but you know, to some kids, having that person that you've maybe formed a great relationship with, it might not change your desire for proximity.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like I think it's great that Josh Gattis is down there. I'm sure they have a good relationship, but it doesn't mean that he's going to want to leave his own backyard and go to Alabama. So that's a good choice. It's really tough to say at this point in time. The second part of the question, would Juwan Johnson declaring for the 2019 NFL draft, speaking of Julian Fleming, would that affect Fleming's possible commitment?
Gee, that was nicely segued. I didn't even get to look at these questions ahead of time. That works out well. One quick thing I would note, too, is that Brian Bressy is another 2020 kid. I believe he's number one player in the country. If not, he should be. Penn State's going to be in the mix for this one, but I'll tell you what. If you go online and you look up the Under Armour camp highlights from the Baltimore stop over the weekend, man, that kid is a 2020 recruit, and he looks like he could start for Alabama now. I mean, he is just absolutely ridiculous. So Fleming is the guy I think Penn State gets. Bresty is the guy that if they got him, you know, James Franklin have reason to host a party at Beaver Stadium. But as it relates to the Fleming question specifically, I don't think it makes a difference either way. If Juwan Johnson would declare that, I think Penn State's getting Julian Fleming no matter what's on the roster. So to me, it doesn't make a difference.
I think when you line up all the wide receivers that Penn State has and has gotten recently, losing one, even if it's your number one, isn't a big deal. The only way that I would personally say that becomes an issue is if three Penn State wide receivers leave somewhat unexpectedly and suddenly the depth chart is that much more clear. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know what Julian Fleming's priorities are. Usually a kid like that with that kind of ability and that much fanfare is going to be on the side where they prefer early playing time because physically – that's what should be happening.
You know, the other thing, though, too, is that to me, I don't know. I think fans and us in the media look at depth charts and try and make them the end-all, be-all when it comes to recruitment. And I don't know if it's as big a deal as a lot of people think it is. I mean, at quarterback, yes. At running back, yeah, probably. At wide receiver, there's three guys that typically start, and some schools start four. So if you're one of the top players in the nation at your position, there's a pretty good chance you're going to have a shot to come in and compete for one of those spots day one. So at some positions more so than others, I think it makes a difference. Obviously, at quarterback, if there's a five-star quarterback that's starting as a true freshman, it's probably going to impact your ability to recruit that position at the highest level for a couple of years because who's going to want to come in and sit behind that guy if they think they can play from day one? So I think it's a little bit of position-by-position thing when it comes to the depth chart. I'm not sure wide receiver is one of those ones that's looked at the hardest.
It's not high on that list for sure. Even running back, not high on that list,
right?
Because so many programs are using multiple. Bill from Philadelphia, and this is the ultimate praise here from Bill. Says, I was aiming for the 409 tailgate box, which is given to the person who asked the best question of Ross Tucker in their episode later this week. But I think you're more knowledgeable than Ross in regards to recruiting. You can insert life in there, too. looks like James Franklin has shifted away from a single recruiter per recruit and more towards a group approach. It seems inevitable that Brent Pry will get a head coaching job soon. Would you pair another position coach, Tim Banks, for example, to Pry's recruiting targets? Seems like that would quell any uneasiness with recruits in the event that Pry does get another job.
I mean, I think that all along since James Franklin got here, that sort of the plan has been that, you know, they're going to do the best that they can to, they're going to do the best that they can to have multiple guys recruit every kid. And one of the things you've heard James Franklin talk about so often, Dustin, is that their goal is to have a kid not know who his main recruiter is because so many coaches are touching base with him. So I don't know if I'd call it a shift in philosophy or a change in, you know, in the way Penn State goes about its business. I think that's what they've done since Franklin's arrival. And I look, when you lose a coordinator, you might lose guys sometimes. I understand that concern, but what if, let's just say, hypothetical here, I don't know anything, I'm not reading any tea leaves or dropping breadcrumbs, but, you know, if Brent Pry left after next season, I'm assuming your next defensive coordinator is already on the staff, so that would help mitigate a lot of the problems that I think you assume you might run into when you lose a coordinator. Look at what happened with the offensive side of the ball. Has Joe Moorhead taken at least one guy, the quarterback commit in North Carolina, Garrett Schrader, from Penn State? Yeah. But did Penn State lose a whole bunch of former recruits or targets from down the road when Moorhead left? No. And that's because Ricky Ronnie was there. Everyone was familiar with Ricky Ronnie. I think Penn State either subconsciously or maybe indirectly probably had Ricky Ronnie pretty present when these kids were on campus because I think everyone knew that the succession plan was him. So you might be doing that on the defensive side of the ball, even if from the outside looking in, it doesn't appear to be that way. So keep an eye on that. It's something to watch. But, yeah, I don't think Penn State needs to change the way it's doing things. It's already doing what's being suggested here to sort of take care of that potential problem.
I think, James Franklin's got plans for everything, and I think that
except for the 3 hour and 30 minute weather lightning delay, which he now does.
He now does. That's in the repertoire now. That's in the prep book. But this came up in Ricky Slade's recruitment in 2018 when Charles Huff had left, and yeah. You know, everybody's wondering, is that going to change his thinking? Is that going to change his mind? They outright said it. We've had so many coaches that we've built relationships with that this coach leaving isn't going to change everything for us. And that's part of the approach, because the more successful your program is, the more likely you are to lose assistant coaches. That's just a fact of the matter.
Right.
If James Franklin is going to reach his goal of playing in a national championship game and winning a national title, he's going to be losing coaches along the way. He spoke recently about lateral moves, and he used that phrase again and again and again. They can't lose coaches to lateral moves. It seemed like it was sending a message to the administration, I'm guessing. But there will be coaches who are lost, and I think he knows that and understands that. That's why there's not eggs in one basket really anywhere. The same way you want to build depth so you can have continuity from a player standpoint, you're building depth from a coaching standpoint too, and that goes for recruiting. And it makes all the sense in the world to me.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, I mean, you might have coaches that, like, for example, Jawan Sider's recruiting the Florida guys, and there's probably not anyone really that you would consider quote-unquote helping him or quote-unquote being paired with him, I guess you could say. I mean, he's the Florida guy, and he's going to handle Florida. Now, it's not to say Terry Smith and some of these other guys don't have some familiarity with Florida prospects and high school coaches, and it's not to say they don't spend any time either in the state recruiting or talking to some of the coaches and kids down there. But for the most part, it is simply Sider's job to deal with Florida. And there's some other areas of the country that I think guys, you know, Ricky Ronnie is the Midwest guy, and he always has been. Not that Penn State's pulled a lot from the Midwest, but when they have, it's usually him that does the bulk of the recruiting. So there's a little bit of both, I guess you could say. There is some paired work for sure, but each guy seems to have his own sort of niche as well.
I think when it comes to, let's just use Jawan Sider for an example, that was not part of Penn State's core strategy. That was, this candidate is available.
Right.
This candidate has this strength on his resume. We will hire this candidate, and we will use that strength. If Jawan Sider in a year or two moves on, I don't think Penn State abandons Florida, but I think that Penn State you know, they still are who they are on a recruiting front, and that's to dominate the Mid-Atlantic region, not just Pennsylvania, but the whole region. And the more they can reach outward, the better. But this, in Sider's case, it was just them utilizing what he brought to the table,
right,
more than a purposeful effort, I guess, to really start to dominate in Florida, so to speak.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, it's not like Penn State woke up, you know, it's not like James Franklin woke up one morning and said, you know, if we just had a guy that could, you know, hammer down and recruit the state of Florida, we'd be so much further ahead. It wasn't the case. It was, okay, we have an opening. We know David Corley is flexible. And it's not to say Jawan Sider could not be flexible and coach the receivers. And if you wanted to leave Corley at the running backs, which he was originally hired for, but Sider's been a running back coach all the way. And there's no question in my mind that part of the reason he's no longer at Florida is because they were moving him to the tight ends room. And you know, he didn't really want to do that. He would have done it, but this opportunity at Penn State came, and there, here we are.
Mark from Berwyn, with all this discussion regarding Pitt on the out-of-conference schedule, who would you like to see Penn State play?
I don't know, Dustin. Who would you like to see Penn State play?
I want to see Penn State play Pitt.
Yeah,
you cannot simulate the genuine feelings that these two fan bases have towards each other, and I respect it. I know it is a business. Scheduling non-conference games is a business.
Absolutely,
Pitt doesn't check all the boxes for Penn State. I get that. I just think that it has rivalry potential. I also understand that there's a lot more for Pitt to gain than for Penn State to gain, which is part of what drives us too. But just from a, you know, to isolate this just from a game and a rivalry standpoint, you can say it's a rivalry. You can say it might not be a rivalry. You cannot look at, you know, how Penn State fans felt about last year's game and not be like, man, it'd be fun to see this again. It'd be fun to see this every year.
Right.
I've been for the Penn State Pitt rivalry all along, but I get it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you that between the business of it and some other stuff, it just doesn't seem like it'll ever work out again. The one I'm most excited for, it's actually already on the schedule. It's Virginia Tech. We're seeing Penn State go head to head with a ton of. They were with Virginia Tech for a ton of prospects. Yep. I mean, it has been not just Devin Ford. I mean, you got not just Nana Seidu. There's a handful of guys that have had Virginia Tech as a finalist, and Penn State's won for almost all of them. So I don't know. I think that'll be a cool matchup. I think that's the start of a budding. I know we get all weird about the world rivalry, but a matchup that I think will be interesting on and off the field for years to come. So that's who I want to. I'm interested to see that first game 2020.
And Penn State has a lot to gain from a recruiting standpoint if you show well down there. All right. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Ask Greg. This has been the Keystone Kickoff Show. You can catch us all the time, KeystoneSportsNetwork.com, and by downloading the Keystone Sports app. We'll see you next time. Hey, Penn State fans, here is your chance to take something off your bucket list. That's right, GoPSU RV is offering a full range of RV setups ready for a weekend of great tailgating at their Lions Den, which is the closest single-game RV overnight lot to Beaver Stadium. You can arrive anytime Friday afternoon. Stay until Sunday morning, avoiding all that traffic. Don't miss this unique opportunity. Go online to GoPSURV.com and reserve your RV today.
You trust AAA to work at every mile. But AAA doesn't just cover your car. They can also cover your home. AAA Home Insurance protects every square foot. And when you add AAA Home Insurance to AAA Auto Insurance, you get more protection and more savings. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent today or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA Home Insurance.
Hey, Keystone Sports Nation, it's Scott Shirley, the Executive Director of Uplifting Athletes, inviting you to join us for the annual Gridiron Gala Saturday, June 9th in downtown Harrisburg at the Keystone Building. Features all you can eat and drink, tailgate food, and special guests, including Devin Still, former Penn State All-American and NFL star, and most importantly, the father of Leah, who courageously beat her rare cancer and inspired millions. Visit upliftingathletes.org to learn more and help us tackle rare diseases. Hope to see you there.